Parshat Bo. Parshat Bo is where the Torah shifts, because and it's where the famous first Rashi question shows up. Because right, because Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Lo Hayta Torah Tzricha Latchil Ela Me'Chodesh Hazeh Lachem Shemitzvah Rishona. Right. So why Bereishit? Good. So then all the famous challenges to Rashi's question and all the answers to the question. But the point is that from the bed of Bereishit until the middle of Parshat Bo, everything is narrative. And the only context in which you see law is in reference. For instance, in the context of the story of God creating man, you hear what may be a law, and that is the law of Puruvu. Maybe. Within the context of man being put into the garden, you hear about the particular command about which trees to eat from. Right? In the context of Noach coming out of the Teva, you hear directives about murder and Ev Min Achai, but it's all within the context of a story. And even Brit Milah, which is the most halachic section of Bereishit, and where we might derive many halachot about Brit Milah from the passages in Bereishit Yud Zayin, is still given within the context of Avram's name change and the promise of a son. Gid HaNasheh is a fascinating piece by itself, because Gid HaNasheh, which shows up in Parshat Vayishlach, Chazal say really belongs to Parshat Shmini, or some later point in the Torah where all of the forbidden foods are. Why is it there? It's there to explain why we do it, so it's there within the context of the story, but it's there purely contextually. So there really is no legal literature. Now you go to the beginning of Shemot, there's absolutely no legal literature whatsoever, up until we get to the middle of Parshat Bo, and then it's kind of like driving about 70 miles an hour on a freeway, hopefully, and then doing a hard stop and a turn and driving on a whole different kind of road. Because it's exactly what hits. Because if you've been riding along on this roller coaster through 59 chapters, 50 chapters of Bereishit, 9 chapters of Shemot, you're accustomed to reading a history with an agenda, a history with a particular point of view, a history with particular assumed ends in mind, but a history. And then really the story of a family. And then suddenly, and what you kind of expect is, okay, here's what you do to Paro next. Or here's what you tell Bnei Israel to do next. It's all part of the story. Right? And suddenly law begins. And law begins in Mitzrayim. And it doesn't begin with, now let me tell you a story. It's, Tabru Bnei Israel, Be'asor L'chodesh Hazeh, Arba Yamim, all these halachot and chametz and bal yirayim, bal yimatzit, mixing from later in the parasha, and then it shifts back in the story to be true. It shifts back in the story, and now there's a pendulum, like not really a pendulum. It's almost like a ricochet that happens from now up until the beginning of Mishpatim, between story and law. Because you have, after Parshat HaChodesh, you have Moshe talking to Bnei Yisrael, but in the middle of that, he gives mitzvot. We're going to see one of them today. And then we go to the story of Makat Bechorot, and about Paro coming in the middle of the night. And then suddenly Chukat HaPesach, and suddenly Bnei Yisrael leave, and suddenly Kadesh Likol Bechor, and all the mitzvot to go along with that. And suddenly B'Shalach, and Shirat Hayam, and then suddenly the Naman, but then suddenly particular Halachot, of course, that's within the context of a story. And then we get to Yitro, and Yitro is laws within the context of a story, and then boom, Matan Torah. So there's this kind of shifting back and forth until finally, at the beginning of Parshat Mishpatim, we feel like we're on firmer ground, that we're now reading a legal text. So law starts here. One of the central postulates of law in the Torah is that a law is presented once. And there is no reason to present the law twice. There's no such thing as saying, well, it's really important, so we're going to say it twice. There's no reason to present it twice unless there's something deficient in the first presentation. Which, by the way, is the heart and soul of Midrash Halacha. Saying, why did you have to say it there? You already said it here. The answer is, from here I would have only known X. That gives me a different context. That gives me an expanded ruling. It gives me other circumstances. Second principle is that principles are taught once. So that if a particular law gives us a principle of women are exempt from time-bound mitzvot, or gives us a certain principle of asei docha lo taseh, or whatever the principle might be, a governing principle of law, that principle will be taught once. It's such a hard rule that if the principle seems to be taught twice, our approach is that it has become a closed circle. And the only reason the Torah said it twice, because I could have figured it out from once and applied it universally, is because it only applies to those two places, a principle known as Shnei Ktuvim Abayim Ke'achad, Ein Malamdin. Now there's dispute about that. Rita says Malamdin, but Shlosha Ktuvim Abayim Ke'achad, Ein Malamdin, everybody will agree that if a principle is enunciated in three separate places, the principle is closed to those three places. That's how much we're wed to the idea that the Torah is economical in its presentation. And yet, the Torah's laws are not presented apodictically, they're presented casuistically. And the difference is as follows. Apodictically would mean, if you cause damage, you got to pay. The Torah never says that. What does the Torah say? If a man's ox gores another man's ox, then he keeps it, etc. Meaning it's all presented within cases, casuistically. That is the style of presentation of the Torah. If you think about it, it seems to be running in two opposite directions. Because if you really want economy, you're going to present laws, not cases. But this is common in the Near East. It's presented as cases. We extrapolate the principles from the cases, and we only need one case to extrapolate the principle, and then we apply it to all similar cases. Which leads us to the very famous discussion in Baba Kama Daf Hey, which is, why do you need all the different avot nizikin? Isn't the principle that if your property damages somebody else's property, you have to pay? And the Gemara, in the end, says, you're right. If you had any one of the damages plus bor, which is the least likely one, you'd figure them all out, and they're all there, the hilchotehan. Because each one has unique shadings of the law and applications of where it applies, or to what things it applies, what circumstances it applies, etc. So that's kind of the base of law, the way that it's presented. And there's no better parsha than Parshat Bo to have that discussion, because this is where it starts. And it starts in Parshat Bo because Parshat Bo presents a violation of everything I just told you. Right? Which is that the Torah tells us, it gives us a command, and it gives us that same command, and it gives us that command yet again. And then Dvarim gives it to us again. So you're going to turn around and say, well, I don't care about the one in Dvarim, because Dvarim, after all, is a repetition of, it's not at all. And I want to relate this to Dvarim. Because Sefer Dvarim is not a repetition of the Torah. Mishnei Torah doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean a second Torah, certainly not. But it's not a repetition. If you look at the mitzvot as they're presented in Dvarim, you have one of three categorical slices. You either have mitzvot that you're familiar with from typically Vayikra, that are presented with a nuance, with a different nuance, different wording, expanded cases or whatever it may be. You have mitzvot that never showed up before that show up in Sefer Dvarim, like Ma'akeh, for instance. And then you have mitzvot which are also new, but are new because there's a new circumstance, meaning we're about to enter the land. So all the mitzvot of war show up only in Dvarim. And mitzvah Melech is only in Dvarim. But the first category, which is those mitzvot which show up elsewhere that are quote-unquote repeated in Dvarim, are not repeated. So, for instance, in Parshat Mishpatim, you have the law of the mifateh. If a man seduces a young maiden who's not married and has relations with her. And in Sefer Dvarim, in what looks like the parallel clause, it talks about the case of ones, which is rape. But they're not the same in ways that we understand. And the halachot are not the same. And what we end up doing in Midrash Halacha is to take the two of them and meld them together and say, what do we get from this mix? How does one inform the other, and what's the larger picture we get from them? I mention that because, as I said, in Parshat Bo, we immediately violate this law because there's a mitzvah given in Bo, and it's given in Bo again, and then it's given in Vatchanan, but as I said, given in Vatchanan doesn't make it any easier. Because it's not that Sefer Devarim is a repetition. Sefer Devarim is a new angle, etc. So we have to ask the same question. All right? So I'm doing this in advance of Pesach. Because it's always in advance of Pesach. I have a friend, as I mentioned to my wife this morning, I have a friend who in Shavuot is sitting at the table and he's eating cheesecake and he opens a sefer and his wife immediately whisks the sefer away and says, Od mat Pesach. Right? Pesach's right around the corner. You don't want to get the crumbs into the sefer. So it's almost always, it's always before Pesach. But Pesach really is kind of around the corner, believe it or not, only 10 weeks away. And when we come to the Seder, we meet an unlikely group, storied in song and in art, by the way. If you've ever seen Illustrated Haggadot from the Renaissance period, one of the most fascinating pieces of Illustrated Haggadot, maybe the most, is the way that the four sons are depicted. Especially the one who I find the most interesting son of all, which is the Rasha. It's just great how he's depicted. And you compare it to what's going on in that period, in that place. A lot of fun. Is that we come and we approach it backwards. Because we sit in the Seder, we're reading a presented Midrash that's to us. We read it as if that's text. It's not. It's Midrash. Meaning it's its own text. But it's a Midrash on a text. So instead I want to do it, instead of top down, I want to do it bottom up. Meaning instead of reading what Chazal gave us, I want to do what Chazal did. All right? Which is, they took a look at four psukim and they came up with some conclusions about them. Four passages, more than psukim. So let's take a look at the psukim. All right, the first time that anything appears anywhere in Tanakh about educating your kids is here. And that is that Moshe, after mitzvah Parshat HaChodesh, and Moshe gives the his direct command about the hyssop, putting the blood on the door, etc., and then says, when you come to the land, which itself is an interesting piece about what did Bnei Israel really think was happening and where were they going in the morning when they were leaving and for how long, what were they supposed to take with them, and was Eretz Yisrael right around the corner, or was Eretz Yisrael, you know, Nechtekatog, Mashiach Zeiten, is itself a question. Right? But he did say, when you come to the land, you're going to keep the Sabodah. And then we have the following. You keep this avodah. When your sons say to you, Maha avodah zot lachem. Now, what does the word avodah mean? In this context, avodah means one thing, and that is worship. Totally cool, positive word. Okay, ma avodah zot lachem. Right? Within the context of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, it's a little bit of an ironic word. Because of the word avodah, the way Paro uses it, especially in Parakeh. But nonetheless, avodah zot is referring to worship, and it's referring here clearly to Pesach, because what did Moshe say in the previous pasuk? Ushmartem et avodah hazot. You're going to keep this worship. You're going to maintain this worship. Okay. Va'amartem. So when your son says to you, what is this worship to you? Va'amartem zevach Pesach hu la'adonai asher pasach ha'batem ne'yisrael b'mitzvayim no'kpon mitzvayim v'fazinu itzil. So you should tell him. And this is what you should tell him. Now that's not part of what you tell him. That's the end of the story. After Moshe tells them this whole thing and tells them that their sons will say this question and that is what they should answer, so then they bow down in thanksgiving for all of that. Okay. Is there anything that you see in this interaction that's not good? Anything you see in this interaction that's problematic?
Seems like an innocent question.
And seems like the Torah is directing information that we might not have known. In other words, we might not have known what we have to tell the kid. We could have said, had I not known this, I could have said, don't ask questions. God said so. So there's a very big new concept here, which is answer questions. It's not so obvious, especially within the world of religion. Second of all, the answer could have been that we're bringing a thanksgiving offering to God who has saved us from slavery. That's not what you tell him. So we're told particular details about us and about Egypt and about what happened that night, and that's why we're doing this every year. Okay, good. And I'm totally fine with that. And hold on a second. So when I have a son who turns to me and says, why are we doing this korban? And I would say to him, we're doing this korban because it's called a Pesach, because God passed over or protected two different translations, our houses when he killed the Egyptians.
Yeah.
So, that's what it is, yeah.
Do you read it, V'amartem Zevach, kama Pesach u'Lashem?
No.
Or is it Zevach Pesach?
It's clearly Zevach Pesach.
Yeah.
From the Tamim. What?
I think because of the dash?
No, it's one word. Zevach Pesach. Look, there's only one Tam. It's clearly understood to be one word.
Oh, the note. I got
you. Right, yeah.
Okay,
yeah, yeah, that makes it one word.
This comes before they actually leave Mitzrayim, right? This comes before.
Yes, this is evidently the way we read it in context is they're in Mitzrayim, and Moshe is commanding them about the Korban Pesach sometime between Rosh Chodesh and the 10th, because they don't have it yet. And he's telling them that you're going to maintain this Avodah even when you get to Eretz Yisrael, which, by the way, is not an obvious thing. Matter of fact, it's not even obvious you'd ever do it again. The most reasonable thing is it's a one-shot deal. You're doing it because Makapachorot's not going to happen every year. Right? And then he says, and so since you're going to be doing it in future generations, your kids are going to ask you what it is. Nobody's going to ask you what it is tonight. They all know. But in future generations, they're going to say, what is this? And here's the answer. Tell them the information. This is the information that's vital for them to know.
Doesn't
that make sense? The truth is, at this point, everything is fine, and I'm not bothered by anything. But I'm not only not bothered by anything, I feel fully equipped to go forward into history and to celebrate this every year and to field questions. It's all good. Which is why things now start to get weird. So we go through the whole story of Makat Bechorot. We go through the story of Paro coming in the middle of the night, Paro be pijama be'ensa halayla, I think that's what the pasuk says, and then of Moshe saying, you know, we're going to take our time, we're going to leave in the morning, and then Chukata Pesach, and then Bnei Yisrael walk out. And as they walk out, at some point in there, Hashem gives Moshe a series of mitzvot relating to Kiddush Bechorot, and to celebrating this holiday in an ongoing fashion, which was already presented in Parshat HaChodesh, but more details, including the idea of Matzah and Maror as part of the story, right? Okay, good. And in the middle of that, he says, V'higareta levincha b'yom ahu lemor. B'yom ahu means zachor t'yom hazeh, meaning the day that you're, the anniversary when you're going to celebrate this. You tell him, which means, again, this is not this year, because you've already, that already happened last night. We're on our way out. When you celebrate this in the future, on that day, you're going to tell your kid, Ba'avur zeh, asah Adonai li b'tzeitim Mitzrayim. Now, Ba'avur zeh is, of course, a very enigmatic phrase. What's it referring to? It's referring to something because he's pointing, because zeh means he's pointing. So what's he pointing to? The Chazal understand he's pointing to the Matzah Maror, or the Pesach Matzah Maror. In other words, we're celebrating it in order that we could celebrate it. Kind of a circular thing. But here, I suddenly have to scratch my head and say, what do I need this for? I already was told that when my child asks a question about Yitziat Mitzrayim, and during the, in other words, the question is provoked by the celebration, I'm supposed to answer it. I'm supposed to give him information. All right? So I look at this and I say, well, I already got that. Why don't you shnei ketuvim b'mayim ke'achad? Why don't you need another thing to tell me the same thing? All right? And then I roll not much further ahead, and in the second parsha of Kadesh, which is Vayaki V'yacha, Hashem says again, Vayaki shalcha v'incha machar lemor. Machar here, not meaning tomorrow, but down the pipe in history. Mazot. Now, the mazot is referring to, I don't yet know what it is. But, v'yamartayla v'chosek yorot, siyam v'lai mitzvayim mitavadim. By the way, and it continues. Vayiki kshafar ala shachinu v'agan donai ko b'chor mitzvayim mechom me'adam v'chom me'adam v'chom me'al kenen z'vech v'adam v'chom me'al kenen z'vech v'chom me'al kenen z'vech v'chom me'al kenen z'vech v'chom me'al kenen z'vech v'chom me'al kenen Those psukim are all part of the answer you give to the kid. So here, I'm a little less bothered because when I think about what the mazot is, I have to look a few psukim above. And what is it that we're commanded to do that Hashem says, and when your kid says to you, mazot, about that, here's what you answer. The answer is it has nothing to do with Pesach. This is when you come to the land, you're going to give all firstborn animals to God, and the firstborn donkeys, etc., and the firstborn children will be redeemed. And when your kid says, Vusidus, because your kid sees you bringing a new lamb to the Kohen, or paying the Kohen 5 shekel for your for your nephew. I mean, it's not for your brother because it couldn't happen. But if, you know, for a new kid, and he says mazot. So your answer is that Hashem killed the bechorot, and therefore all of our bechorot are holy, and therefore I have to bring the animals and I have to redeem the children, the humans. Okay, but still, it's a little bit of the same problem, which is I already know that when a child asks me about something related to Yetziat Mitzrayim, I'm supposed to tell them the story. So what's chadash here? And then I roll ahead to Devarim, which again is not immune from the issue of repetition, because it's not a repetition. And we find here in Devarim, in the series of mitzvot that come right after the Aseret HaDibrot, he shalchav incha machar lemor maha edot v'chukim v'mishpatim asher tzivah Adonai Eloheinu etchem. Right? So now, by the way, this has nothing to do with anything, meaning it's not Korban Pesach, it's not Korban Bechor, it's not Pidyon Bechorot, anything. It's just a kid turns around and says, what are all the laws that Hashem commanded? You've martal v'mincha, and you answer him, avadim ha'inu. But what's weird here is the Torah yet again is commanding, and this is what the michlol, the whole picture, becomes very bizarre. The Torah commands us essentially the same thing four different times. What is the Torah commanding us? That we have to tell our children about Yetziat Mitzrayim in detail. Not just we left, but details. Yad Chazakah, Menog Poet Mitzrayim, Ototu Moftim, etc. And so then, Yavo HaShoel V'Yishal, I don't get it. Why is the Torah doing the same thing four times? It violates all the rules of the way of the economy of the Torah. Right? So taking a look at this picture, what conclusion do Chazal come to?
Negative.
They come to the conclusion, which is formulated in three different ways, as you see on the back page. I say three different ways because it's one answer, but the formulations are different, and in the differences lie some quirky and fascinating twists, right? Especially the last one. The first one you have on top of the page is what may be the earliest formulation of it, which is in the Mechilta, the Midrash Halacha in Parshat Bo, and it picks up on the phrase "V'igata talavincha." Now, what does that mean? Arba banim hem. Doesn't mean there's four sons. There are no four sons. What does that mean? Arba banim is that the Torah is responding to four types: echad chacham, echad rasha, echad tam, echad sheni yodi tzol, and we're familiar with all that. And what does it say? Chacham mahomer. Now, this is where the Midrash Halacha gets real feisty. Look what it does. It says chacham mahu omer, and it quotes the question from Sefer Dvarim. Ma'edot v'chukim mishpatim asher tzivah Adonai Eloheinu otanu. And by the way, what does the Midrash Halacha here do? It changes the pasuk. Because what does the pasuk actually say? Etchem. Now, what's the big question that we all ask at the Seder? Why are you so angry at the Rasha for saying lachem? The Chacham said etchem also. So I once heard from Professor Lyman an answer. He says, I'll save you 45 minutes at the Seder. Here's the real answer. He said, you know, Chacham, you know, the Rasha, he goes to university. He knows Hebrew grammar. So he says lachem. He really means lachem. The Chacham sitting in Koyla, what is it? Eschem or Sanu? What is he? He doesn't know anything about grammar. It doesn't mean anything. But of course, that's close to silly. Right? If it wasn't Professor Lyman, I would say it was silly. But in any case, here the Midrash Halacha actually changed the pasuk because of that problem. And so now, notice what the answer given in the Midrash Halacha. Afata ptachlo b'hilchot ha-pesach. So what do you tell the Chacham? It gives us an answer that's not in the Torah, which means it's as if the Baal Haggadah, the Baal Midrash, is saying, okay, the Torah said one thing, but I got a better idea. Imagine the chutzpah, right? At p'tachlo b'ilchot ha-pesach, ein maftir achar pesach afikoman. Now notice the phrase here is at p'tachlo. What does p'tachlo mean? What does p'tachlo mean? It's a strange phrase, and it's actually borrowed from somewhere else. But here, p'tachlo b'ilchot ha-pesach may mean, in this context, start from the beginning of Hilchot Pesach, and in some of the nuschaot it reads, ad ein maftir nachar pesach afikoman, which is the last Mishnah in Masechet Pesachim. In other words, you ask the question, why? Who cares about the afikoman? Why is the afikoman such a big deal that you want to teach the chacham? The answer is, it's not that you're teaching afikoman, you're teaching everything, including up to and the last thing, all the way to Omega, Alpha to Omega. Right? And now, Rasha Mahu Omer, Mavodah Zot Lachem, and now we pick one, what? Lachem V'lolo. So here's the question I have. Why are we so bothered by the Lachem when the Chacham actually said Etchem? And by the way, the Lachem is a reasonable word. You're schlepping me to Aunt Sadie's house? Why is Aunt Sadie so important to you? Aunt Sadie's not important to me. You're making me go to Yerushalayim to bring a korban? What's so important to you about this korban that I have to go? It's a reasonable question. So why are we picking on the Lachem? Now take a look for a moment at source 7. In source 7, which is the Yerushalmi's take on this, Ben Rasha Mahomer Mahavodozat Lachem Mahatorach. In other words, there they pick up not on the word Lachem, but on the word Avodah, which, by the way, is the right word to use. We don't expect them to say Maha Korbana Zelachem. Mahavodah Zelachem is the right word. So why are we jump? It's like we're jumping on everything he says, Avodah, Zelachem, where they're all correct words. So turn back to the first page, and I think that the answer to this entire mystery really lies with, again, the one I think is the most interesting guy here, and that's the Rasha. And Chazal think of him as the most interesting guy. You can see that from their answers. Take a look at Pasuk, the first source, Pasuk Chavav. Vayaki umru aleichem b'neichem. By the way, the entire piece lies in these words. Vayaki umru aleichem b'neichem. Now, look at the four words the kid says. Ma ha'avodah hazot lachem. How do you punctuate that? What do you put at the end of that? Ma ha'avodah hazot lachem. Question mark, right? Ma. And yet, what's the verb used? No, the verb that the kid uses.
There's no verb meaning it's present tense.
No, there is a verb. Vaya
yomru.
No, you mean that.
Right. Which means not sha'al. Now, by the way, if I only have this pasuk, I don't know. Maybe the proper verb to use for when a kid asks a question is yomru. That's why I need sources 3 and 4 where it says yishal. And suddenly I'm using comparative literature, contrasting texts to highlight what each text means. And suddenly these four are not, one's important and the three of them are extraneous, but all four of them inform about each other. If I don't have 3 and 4, I don't know that yomru is a treif word. But I suddenly realize it's a treif word. That's no way for a kid to talk to his father. Or shall we say differently, what is yomru with a question mark? It's a rhetorical question. Who is supposed to ask rhetorical questions? Is it appropriate for a mom to say to her kid, you call this a clean room? Totally appropriate. And often the appropriate, the most accurate thing. Is it appropriate for a kid to say to his mom, you call this cooked chicken? Of course not. Is it appropriate for an underling to ever speak to the authority and with a rhetorical question? It's amazing chutzpah. So vayaki yomru alechem b'neichem maha. The minute you say yomru alechem b'neichem, it's already not good. Ma avodah zot lachem. You hear the cynicism in this kid's voice. Once you hear the cynicism, what do? Oh, avodah. Oh, you mean work. Ah, lachem. You mean you're not part of it. In other words, we interpret his words not based on what the words mean, but based on the inflection that we hear given to us by Yomru. Then suddenly Lachem means I don't want anything to do with this. Not just what does it mean to you, but I don't want to do with this. Now go back to the back page and look at the famous Midrash. Lachem v'lo-lo. Now you understand where Lachem v'lo-lo comes from. It's not from a technical read of Lachem. Well, the fish otzit, that's what I'm going to call kafar, v'kafar ba'ikar. Many of the minuschaot, it's without the vav, meaning taking yourself away from the community is kfirah bi'ikar. It's denying the basic principle. Afata ket shinav, set his teeth on edge, remorlo, and what's the pasuk? Now notice, we're taking a pasuk from where? The pasuk that we associate with the silent child. In other words, these four passages have now become a pot. Take the question you want, take the answer that fits, and put them together. So the Chacham asks a question, which we got in Dvarim. Don't give him the answer in Dvarim. Give him another answer, which is Hechot HaPesach. The Rasha challenges the way he does. You know how you hit him back? Hit him back with the one you tell the silent kid.
And what's the basis for doing
what? No, good. Because why are all four of these here? What's the essential principle that Chachamim are digging to? You have to answer the child based on the question. There's no such thing as a uniform answer. And how do you know how to answer? Listen carefully to the question. So let's go to the easy ones. When a kid is sitting there and says nothing, what do? You still got to tell him. You cannot absent yourself. But what do? You got to tell the bincha bayomah hulimor ba'avur zeh. What does zeh always mean in Tanakh? You're pointing to something. Right? The famous midrash on Achodesh Hazeh Lachem. Moshe didn't know what a new moon looked like, so Hashem showed him. Zeh maseh ha-menorah. Moshe didn't know what the menorah is supposed to look like. Right? Got confused by the stamps. Machzid ha-shekel. Moshe didn't know what a machzid ha-shekel. Zeh yitnu. Zeh. It's always pointing. So what's bavur zeh? It means, for that kid who can't even formulate a question, you got to have physical show and tell. And you point to it. Okay, good. And what these four pieces tell us is that you always have to take the appropriate answer, appropriate question, and it might not be presented that way in the Torah, but the Torah gave you all four to create a pot. And so what do when the kid says, Mavo dazot lachem? Say, oh, lachem. I'm part of it. Guess what? Ba'avur zeh asah Adonai li. What does li mean? Li v'lolo, just like lachem. Tit for tat.
But how do you get to the transposition part?
That's exactly what I told you, because the Torah puts all four of these in a pot. The Torah presents the same mitzvah in four different phrases, and what's the only difference between them? The difference between them is the questions that are asked, or the lack of question. So what's the Torah teaching you? What's the Torah teaching you? The Torah is teaching you, you've got to answer the question based on the question. Not based on the circumstance, not based on what provoked the question, but the question. If the question is a simple question, give a simple answer. If the question is not a question, you got to use tactile education. If the question is a sophisticated question, you can engage in sophisticated answers, and you should. You don't want to bore kids. And if the question is a defiant statement, then you come back with defiance and show them what the cost is of having that attitude, and watch what happens. Take a look in the in the Rasha, in the top one, li v'lo lecha. Ilu ha'ita sham lo ha'ita nigal. That's not the version we use in the Haggadot. Please look at the Haggadah Tarambam, which is a slightly different version, and it's very close to the Haggadah the way we have it. Rasha mahu omer. You see it? In the Rambam, in the source 6. Ma ha'avodah zot lachem, lachem v'lo lo. What does it mean, lachem v'lo lo?
Not to the person asking the question.
Now notice, but we're not talking about him, we're talking to him. Because the line above says, Afatem mor, But we're talking to him.
Right.
Afatah haket shinavem morlo. Who set his teeth on edge. And how do you set his teeth on edge? Say to him, Ba'avur zeh asah Adonai li b'tzitzit Mitzrayim, li v'lo lo. Why isn't li v'lo lecha? Where do we get that from? So turn the page again, go back to the first source, and tell me, what's the answer the Torah prescribes for this kid? Pasuk Chav Zayin. See it?
Yeah.
Va'amartem Zevach Pesach. Is there anything wrong with that? Remember when we looked at the first parsha, it says, is there anything wrong here? It looks fine, it looks smooth, it looks beautiful. Kid asks a question, father answers a question, it's all great. I'll tell you, there's something else that's stinky here. Va'amartem zavach pesach. Now compare it, please, to sources 2, 3, and 4, and tell me about the preposition. How does source 2 start? We got a ta.
Singular.
Livincha. Livincha. What about source 3? Va'amarta elav. Look at source 4. Va'amarta livincha. Every one of them is a preposition I'm speaking to. Look back at source 1. What does it say? Va'amartem. Zevach Pesach means you don't talk to him. What do? You make a declaration. By the way, what's the declaration? So think about this. In the last one at the bottom in Sefer Devarim, what's the statement you're teaching your kid? Hashem took us out with miracles and he gave us this beautiful mitzvot. He gave us a schut. Beautiful. What do you say in the third source? Hashem took us out with a strong arm and he killed the Bechorot. Very good. And the second source, Hashem took us out for this. What do you say in the first source? The Zevach Pesach who? That did what? Who Hashem who did what?
Passed over.
He passed over when he was doing what? Killing the Egyptians. In other words, the message to this kid is, Not everybody made it out of Mitzrayim. And the real question is, whose house would you have been in? So you understand, if we read the text sensitively, we actually end up coming to the conclusion Chazal came to, which is that the way to respond to this kid is to, A, to talk past him, as if he weren't there, let him know what separation from the group leads to. It leads to being ignored and being left out. And asking the huge question, which is, what would you have done when that day came? Whose house would you have been in? Right? And so what happens is, the result of these four, we can go much further, but time is an issue, is the result is that these four passages actually inform each other and show us how to sensitively read the other one. Because you see what's missing in the first one, and again, the first one's the key to it all. You only see what's missing in the first one when you see 2, 3, and 4. You don't speak to the child, the child's saying a question. And suddenly we pick apart every part of his quote-unquote question, which isn't really a question, and tear it apart and show that he's demonstrating a very bad attitude about everything, about inclusion and about the commitment, etc. And we respond to him. And the response is that you don't want to be part of the group. Well, I guess there's a cost for not being part of the group. And that's what the cost is. Last facet, there's a chart at the bottom which actually helps you walk through it. But take a look at the last source in the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi has a twist to it, which is of real interesting historic significance. The Yerushalmi says, remember, the Yerushalmi is the product of Eretz Yisrael, and in Eretz Yisrael, in these generations, when this Midrash is being compiled, the main interaction that we're having with the other is with Jewish Christians. Important to note that one of the founding myths of Christianity is related to Pesach. Pesach is the most important holiday from the Christian perspective, and Easter in their calendar is the most important holiday. Christmas is a Gornish. And Easter, by the way, in Latin is called Pascha, right? And the, what? Okay, so same piece. And the... and the whole issue of we've talked about this before, that they would have a Pesach Seder and they would have Pesach and Matzah Mara, and they have different explanations for what they mean. You know, the early quadrodecimans, the guys who celebrated on the 14th of Nisan. But one of the founding myths was that when Herod Antipater put out the decree to kill all the babies, right? That Jesus and his parents fled to Egypt. And only when he died and there was an amnesty declared did the voice go out that you can now return to Israel to fulfill that which is said by the prophet, from Egypt I have summoned forth my son. Mitzvah karati livni, which of course has nothing to do with that, but you know, they do it with these midrashim for their purposes. And they saw the entire story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim as being a foreshadowing of the crucifixion. So the domino, the Meshkol HaShem HaZot, forms a cross and all this other kind of stuff. Notice how we very cleverly pick that apart. Take a look at the Ben Rasha in the Yerushalmi. Ben Rasha Ma'omer, Ma Avodah Zot Lachem, Ma Torah Chazeh Shatem Atrichim Alein B'chol Shana V'Shana. Again, here we don't pick on Lachem, but on Avodah. Mikivan Shotzi Tatzvom Min HaKlal Af Atem Morlo Ba'avur Zeh Asa Adonai Li. Li Asa, now what's our Nusach? Velolacha, or in the other version, liasa velolo. Here it's liasa lo toha ish lo asa. Now, what does otoha ish mean? It means the other guy. It's like saying lo in a really gruff manner. But what? Who's otoha ish in the Talmud? It's Jesus. Right? Yeah, Yevigor Shinan wrote a book about 20 years ago, I don't know, called Otoha Ish, which summarizes Jewish attitudes towards Jesus throughout Talmudic Midrashic literature and later. Right? Ilu haya otoa ish mitzrayim lo yaru liga misham leolam. Look at the language. Now, on a local level, what it means is, had the Rasha been in Mitzrayim, he never would have been redeemed. Okay, that we say. But notice the way we say it. Ilu haya otoa ish mitzrayim lo yaru liga misham leolam. Which means, we don't buy this whole story that he was there. And if he was there, he never would have gotten out. So leave me alone with these shtiyot. And there's room to argue that the Rasha, at least from the perspective of Yerushalmi, the Rasha at the Seder is actually a Jewish Christian. That's how it's configured in the Midrashic literature. Of course, not in the original source. But what you see here, what we've seen over the last 30 minutes or so, is that these four texts which violate an essential rule of the Torah, which is economy of mitzvah, are really there to tell you all of the shadings in between and to give you one basic lesson, which is you need to teach based on the question, but you have to be sensitive to where the question is coming from. And we couldn't really gain that sensitivity without seeing all the different questions. It would take another hour to go through all the details of each question. But again, I think that the nut of this whole lies within the Rashad's interaction and the response that we're told to give to him.